Hey, fannies, it's Andrew, half of Hey Kids Comics, the show that you are listening to on the Jedi Cold Network. And I'm not here to present a podcast to you. I'm here to actually talk to you a little bit about an upcoming event. And to join me, Kelly Long, guest of the show, and kind of big kahuna for this thing. So, Kelly, what are we talking about?
Hey Andy, thanks so much. So, what is coming up in the Boonshoff Museum of Discovery in Dayton, Ohio on June 21st and 22nd? We're going to have a geek prom and a geek fest. So, the geek prom section is on Friday night. We're going to have dancing, we're going to have live music. It's 21 and up, and it's $20 to get in. You get a drink, and you get some snacks, and you get to support the museum. That is the fundraiser section of Geek Fest. Geek Fest is the all-inclusive day. It's going to be from 10 to 4. We're going to have kids costume contests, the planets of Star Wars and the planetarium, the planets of Star Trek. We're going to have a new space exhibit that is debuting that weekend of Geek Fest that I can't really talk about because it's super secret, and Klingons and way more.
Super excited about those Klingons, by the way, ladies and
I
gentlemen. Super excited.
Super.
And where do people buy tickets for this bad boy?
To catch tickets for the event, you have to go to www.boonshoftmuseum.org. You can purchase tickets for the event. You can purchase raffle tickets. And if you want to feel like you may, if you feel like you need to make a donation to the museum, you can also do that there too. We are a nonprofit, so this raises money to help feed the animals in our accredited zoo, to keep all of our natural history collections intact, and to be a service to the community.
Also, you get all of that and you get to feel good about yourself. That's amazing. And I'm going to be there hosting costume contests and doing trivia and just generally being a jackanape about town. What's not to
You can't
love?
miss
You can't miss it. Come down to Crazy Andy's. Get some pizza. See a Klingon. Don't touch a sloth. At the Boonshoff Museum. June 21st and 22nd. Buy the tickets on the website that I can't remember the.
www.boonshoffmuseum.org.
That's the one, ladies and gentlemen. So now we're going to throw you back to your regularly scheduled programming, but don't forget June 21st and 22nd. June 21st and 22nd. June 21st and 22nd for Geek Fest. Going to Geek Fest because it's the best they got Klingon. So bring on the fun. I added another line to the song. Coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
What? Slapping my fannies?
Yeah, it's happening every show now. I'm
right.
Doing it. I am
It's
Andrew
never
with me
going
as
away.
well. The Jedi Cole Houston's over there. We are Hey Kids Comics.
Actually Ultron Cafe's new
What's slapping my fannies?
Yeah, it's their best their greatest hits album.
Oh yeah. Two long plays.
Right.
Two long plays. And with us tonight, just get this over with because I know that none of us are going to be able to contain ourselves. The indomitable Kelly Long is here tonight.
Ah, thank you for having me.
Just so
Thank you
amazing.
for joining us, especially on almost last minute.
That's fine.
It's
Because
just like.
I was looking at, what we had coming up on this story arc. I'm like, oh, this one. This is the Kelly one.
Well, I'm very grateful
We
that you
do
think
that.
of me so positively.
By the way, we do that. We try to identify the Kelly ones and the Eddie ones and the.
No.
But this is the Kelly one. There might
No.
be two Kelly
Yes.
ones. We don't know yet. We'll see
Still working.
what shakes out. But tonight, as part of, and I'm going to get this wrong, are you ready? As part of what did we just watch?
What did we just see?
What did we just see? See, I told you I was going to get it wrong.
We are talking about Captain Marvel, finally.
Yes.
With AllCon and everything else, we just did not have a chance to sit down and talk about it, but thank God we did, and thank God we got Kelly here, because there's a lot of ground to cover.
Let's do it.
gird your loins like primal-aged Batman. It's time to get into this.
Wow.
Oh, Cole, you should know, for good measure, I did pick up a Primal Age Batman.
And it's got furry loins.
And I blame a friend of the show, Michael Fraley, for that purchase.
Okay, well, you know what you need is the Primal Age Ace the Bat-Hound for him to ride around on.
It's just like a warg.
Oh, it's brilliant, and there's like some sort of weird, like, purple dewback for Joker.
Oh, you're being serious.
No, deadly serious, yeah.
Damn it. I'm not buying any more of these.
This is a thing of beauty. It truly is.
I'm not buying any more of these, all right? No more. But yes, tonight, finally, we're going to talk about Captain Marvel. Good movie. I felt it was strong. I felt it was a
solid,
strong entry. It's, again, there are two movies that are in pole position for me with Marvel, and it's hard to, they're kind of unshakable, and that's Captain America Winter Soldier and the third Iron Man movie. Fight me, cowards. Fight me, cowards.
Man, this is like bone claws for me.
Fight me, cowards. That's what I'm saying. I say it. Danae, come on. Aaron, fight me. I'll take two on one.
Wow.
Two on one. Just don't be mad at me because you got tricked into thinking Mandarin was something he wasn't. Why are you mad at me for it?
I like Trevor. I'm going to go on record and say I like Trevor.
Who doesn't like Trevor? Trevor's fantastic. But this is it. This kind of pushed its way up to number three for me.
Okay.
It was that good for me. So let's talk a little bit about what this thing is, and what it was. Kelly, what did you have any background into Captain Marvel prior to Captain Marvel?
Well, I have background in Carol Danvers.
Okay.
She comes in, you know, many different forms.
Yes.
She's, you know, like, I remember reading the Claremont binary story and going, what the fuck is happening? But, you know, I know about Carol. Like, Captain Marvel, I'm more of a DC person, so I didn't read the male Captain Marvel as much. I didn't catch a lot of that.
Right.
But I know all about Carol. So,
you know, it's really interesting to me, the history of Carol Danvers in terms of, not in the comics. The comics is interesting too, right? But in terms of what they tried to do with her, because they literally they would not let that character go. So many characters they've let go to the wayside.
Right.
Hers was one that they just would not stop throwing against the wall, whether it was Binary or the original, you know, the black suit with the yellow bolt, which was...
Right. Warbird.
Warbird, yes. Whether it was Ms. Marvel, which wasn't Carol, right?
It was.
Okay. Yeah,
for a while, it was.
Like, they just kept at it. They would not go until they landed on the one that stuck, and that was Captain Marvel.
Right.
Much
like the montage at the end of the movie.
With all the costumes?
Well, the costumes, but I'll bring up that last montage. We'll get to that more into that later. But, they couldn't – she came out of the feminist movement, the Ms., part of that Ms. magazine, you know, very popular at the time. And then she just wouldn't stop. They just kept bringing her back.
Yeah, which is awesome. The comics, they finally – it really stuck, you know, pre-Civil War.
Yeah.
It really finally kind of, I think, hit a plateau that until this movie was kind of just set, that she was the first, I'm not going to say, okay, all right, non-X-Men, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say she's the first cosmic, like, powerhouse female character that wasn't, like, Death or, like relatable, right, human, you know, like hero.
She wasn't taken over by the Dark Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All of her foibles were her own. All of her foibles were, you know, like in the Second Civil War, because you can't have too many.
Gotta keep bringing it back.
You gotta let Tony have a redemption arc. You got stuff like Carol trying to do like precog crime, stopping precog crime and doing it through like this weird inhuman, but then Tony trying to stop her from that because it wasn't right, but she's trying to do the right thing because it's getting results and it's very military, which is another really interesting take on this character. Is, you know, not only is she, and I think we have to get into it at some point in this show when we talk about the fact that this is the linchpin character of the Marvel Universe is a woman.
Woman.
How awesome is
that? A woman!
Oh, wow.
It's a woman!
I don't know that that's true.
Well, imitating the Joker there.
Go ahead, Kelly.
The thing about Carol Danvers is that Carol Danvers was ridiculously strong mm-hmm. the entire time. Not just when she was, not just when she didn't remember anything, but the entire time. That character, because of her military background and all of the military intelligence stuff that she went through in the various storylines that she was woven, like, I just happened to look up some of them because, you know, it's just one of those things where, like, I'm going to remind myself, oh, yeah, I remember this. Oh, yeah, she was this task force and this and Alpha Flight, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, she was a badass regardless of the powers of the training. Like, Carol Danvers is just a badass, hands down.
Right.
Well, I think even if she hadn't have been Creed, she would have been a badass on Earth.
Right. Exactly.
And very
even
likely
when she was
would have been recruited in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
I mean, in the context of the film.
Right.
But yes, I mean, that's what you're presented with, a character who's got some depth and some capabilities, who then gets sort of like, oh, hey, you know, we got nothing better to do. Let's take this human being back home and turn her into one of us.
Right.
Because they're, you know, obviously we don't, it'd be something to do.
Just something to do.
So I guess, you know, it absorbs some super energy, so that would be a plus, you know. If she absorbed nothing, you know, they'd be like, well, maybe we could just leave her here and she can go on with her life. Because mm-hmm. she was sort of taking a weapon.
Yeah, I think she was definitely not, there was no hospice in her being taken to, you know, Kree land. Can we talk about the Supreme Intelligence for a little bit?
Right? So I have a theory.
Absolutely, because as a fanboy, I was wanted the big head.
Yeah, me too. I really wanted the big head. What's your theory, Kelly?
I have a theory. It might be, it might blow your pants out, so you might need some panty shields.
Good thing I've got my Negan brand shit pants.
Shit's gonna blow your pants out.
So, what if, I mean, we don't know who the Supreme Intelligence is, we just know that it's the Supreme Intelligence, right? What if, based on, like, first of all, Annette Bening, right? Amazing. That's another reason I like this movie, that the people they picked were just incredible, off the charts.
Well, I love the fact that it's almost a mandate now that they find these actors and actresses that have a pedigree.
Right.
And bring them into the Marvel Universe. You're like, the hell? Robert Redford, William Hurt.
Just where did this come from?
I mean, holy crap. Right. I love the casting directors.
Yeah.
Because who played Mar-Vell?
That's Annette Bening.
Was it the same person?
Yeah, because when she goes to visit the Supreme Intelligence, according to the film, it's the person you most respect. But she didn't know who Mar-Vell was at the time.
Right.
She just had this sort of background mental inkling that, hey, here's respectable woman.
Yeah, suppressed memories or whatever. So this is my theory, that the Supreme Intelligence is the Grandmaster from Sakaar.
Really?
Based on the jacket and the way she's like, this jacket is killer. And then the dance move. It's a total Jeff Bloom move.
Is it?
Holy crap. I want you to go back and see it again.
Yeah. You're going to have to go back and look. Because it just happened. I was like, oh, I'm going to see Captain Marvel's amazing. Blew my mind. I throw in Thor and Ragnarok for funsies because it's whatever. And I was watching. And I was like, holy shit. I wonder if it's the Grandmaster.
Wow.
Wouldn't that blow your pants out?
It would blow my pants out.
So that's my grand theory.
Okay.
Well, the thing about it is, it works in the sense that the whole Kree Skrull war is just a chess game to him.
Yep.
Right.
It's like, hey, why don't I tell everybody, you know, for fun, that the Skrulls are taking over our territories, and we should fight them.
So, let's talk a little bit, because I have some questions about Skrulls.
Sure.
So the story goes, I think you guys covered the kind of what happened to get Bear or, you know, Carol to the Kree, and then have them trained in the, you know, SEAL Team 6 of Kree.
Kree.
Whatever that was. Kree Hit Squad. Can we talk about the fact that Jimin Manshu is having a moment right now? Because he's the only person cast in the Captain Marvel movie and the Shazam movie.
Oh, that's so true.
Like, I was like, wait.
He's now the ultimate in Captain Marvels.
Right, he's both.
Yeah.
Captain's Marvel.
Captain's Marvel. But I really liked that twist. And have we talked about the fact that if you're listening to this and you haven't seen the movie, you probably should stop this and
Sorry.
Go see the movie because
wah, wah.
Because this is on you now.
If I remember, I'll put disclaimers in the text, but
okay.
I can't promise that I always remember. But no, absolutely. One of the things that was great about this is, one, you get to see Jimin Hansu's character return pre-Guardians,
right,
as you know, a noble warrior hero, as far as, and that explains his presence as the right-hand man to Ronan and the Accuser.
Right, for sure.
And then you get to see what the hell the Accusers are all about. They're the guys you send in to just pretty much bomb everybody into the Stone Age.
Right.
Right.
They're the executioner.
Yeah, it's like, Pikachu, I accuse you. Wait, no, that's right.
But we did get to see Lee Pace as Ronan again.
Right.
Thank God.
That beautiful face.
He's such
oh my god.
Giant, beautiful elf man.
Just
like
a giant, beautiful blue thing. Blob.
Perfect. He got the Darth Maul treatment in this one.
Ironically, every time I look up Lee Pace's imagery online, I have to then run it through a blue filter. It just doesn't work for me without that azure.
I was gonna make a joke that said more about me than about you. I was like, to get hard, but that says a lot more about me than it does about you, Cole. At the end of the day,
exactly.
I got super excited when he showed up. I got super like set up in my chair. Lacey's just laughing at me because I'm like, oh, Lee Pace is here. This just got interesting.
And we're not even talking balsa.
No. We're moving up to like a pine. I was in public. I mean,
oof.
Come on.
Oh, it's nice.
It's nice. So, let's take a beat and talk about...
You an Oakman, Jimmy?
how well they did the 90s,
right?
Oh dear lord,
my soundtrack, you know, literally songs off the tape that we made, and it was labeled the tape, or the soundtrack.
Right.
Blockbuster was there, you guys.
I know. It's just like, I just have this nostalgic pangs for Blockbuster because I'm like, you know, there's so many in the audience that have no idea what the hell that thing is.
Right, right.
What is
this Blockbuster? That's the last Blockbuster in the United States. Like, it's still a legit store. They still rent videos because they wanted the feel.
Well, so, like, yes, the Blockbuster was there, but, like, the fashion.
The fashion.
And the cars.
Oh, yeah.
Nick Fury's lined about her stolen clothing.
The grunge look.
Yeah, we're saying she looked like someone's disaffected niece.
Yeah.
That was absolutely brilliant. And of course, you have that little bit of artistic license where I have never personally had a dress. A mannequin, undress one, but I'm pretty sure it's a time-consuming process.
It's not that easy.
That then to not only strip the mannequin bare, but then to put it back together.
Yeah, no, yes, yes, it is not
just
a one-person.
A pile apart.
I don't care if you are Captain Marvel; it's not a one-person
this
job.
It's not the photons that she shoots out of her hands.
No, it's the ability to strip, to undress, and rebuild a mannequin.
Those arms come off.
Yeah.
Okay, they do. Like, that's
what
one of the parts.
It falls apart like cheap knockoff Legos.
Yeah, the top half comes off of the bottom half. That's a thing.
You guys have spent a lot of time with naked mannequins, okay?
You would be surprised.
I have no idea.
You would be surprised how long I've wrestled trying to get a mannequin into a size 6 dress when it's obviously a size 8.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, while I've never undressed a mannequin, I've spent more time with them than number 5 in Umbrella Academy.
Wow.
I've got at least 10 years on him.
I don't know if you should say that out loud, dude.
But there were things... There were things.
Yes, there were things.
They did a great job of de-aging, not just introducing us into the 90s, but de-aging the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. Well, and let's bring up the fact that Nick Fury can't be in a movie without a ridiculous car crash.
Oh, he couldn't have it. I don't think they had SUVs yet, really.
Right, yes. The Delta 88, the SUVs of the 80s.
The early 90s.
It's a government car. There's no way that was made in the 90s.
It's true. That's true.
Oh, we've got closure on the mannequin.
Damn it.
Catherine poked her head in. What was the name of that shop that was like three numbers? Like, yeah, like she worked at
579,
she worked at 579 in high school.
Yeah, I did it the movie.
That's how she got that mad skill.
Or 2 days. I guess I did it. I undressed and dressed 3 mannequins the day before I left for Texas. So that pulled me right out. I
that
can willingly suspend my disbelief for that. Everything else I was fine with. This has been mannequin talk.
Mannequin talk. Well, let's bring up the other part about the 90s that you know, the heartbreak of, here's Clark Gregson, you know, like, with hair. And
just Nick Fury with hair.
Right.
Clark
and happy.
With hair.
Singing and, songs.
Yeah, what?
And goofy about cats.
Yeah.
I think he's probably still goofy about cats.
That's what we need to see, though, after Endgame.
Right.
Is him, like, being goofy about cats still.
Yeah.
Or
like
he
gets that box of kittens from Hellboy or something.
What I want at the end of Endgame is a need for a shield to come back. And the last scene after the credits roll, there's a house like, I don't know, in the DC, you know, a suburb of DC. And you kind of got an inside, you hear a doorbell ring and you get a panning shot of the inside. It's just like 8 or 9 cats wandering around. And the hand answers the door, and you know, and Steve Rogers is standing there, and Nick Fury's in the inside, like in a cardigan, a pair of khakis. Like, nope, not doing it, asshole.
Like Leisure Fury.
That's true. Yes, yes, Leisure Fury. So, Skrulls.
Skrulls.
I don't know how we ended up where we were, but I wanted to ask some questions about Skrulls. So, in Act 2 of the story begins with Skrulls crash landing on Earth. I would say that's probably the start of Act 2. And then immediately assimilating, as Skrulls are known to do, into Earth culture. Or whatever culture they're in, right?
Stop copying me.
How do Skrulls approximate clothing?
They just form it like the skin, like.
Yeah, I mean, essentially.
But wouldn't it feel floppy, like skin?
Well, I mean, the thing that is that apparently, like almost anything in the Marvel universe, or indeed any universe that can shapeshift or change or whatever. I mean, you know, someone, whether it was Stan Lee or someone else in the history of the Fantastic Four, I'm not sure where this was coined, but, you know, the idea of the unstable molecule was the best idea.
Right.
Because it automatically not only explained away the FF, but then you could subsequently say, oh, yeah, well, you know, if you're a superhero, you have access to unstable molecule technology.
Right.
And so you can turn invisible without being a floating invisible man suit. Oh, see the shirt? Make a phone call? You know, you can stretch to any, you know, all shapes and forms. You can actually go completely ablaze. And so you have to allow the Skrulls to have some sort of similar clothing.
Okay.
Or the transverse of that is they are like the Signs aliens and naked at home, but have the good decency to at least approximate some kind of clothing, in which case you never have to worry about what to wear.
Right.
They are such fashionistas. They spend about an hour in front of the mirror changing their skin.
Well, it's like Martian Manhunter does the same thing, right?
Right.
It's just something I've always wondered about that. Like, I get, like, getting here buck-ass, like Terminator style, buck-ass naked, and then going out and getting some clothes. What I don't get is, like, oh, there's a girl in a
pants, yeah, glasses, and cardigan.
I like that your Schwarzenegger is slowly becoming, like, a 1970s IRA bomber.
I'm trying to do like a combination of the Krennic guy with his actual accent.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And Schwarzenegger, and it just came out sounding a little bit like Stu on a good day.
Yeah, right. Speaking of Krennic guy, can we talk about Ben Mendelsohn's portrayal of Talos?
Oh. I felt the whole movie like, I know who this guy is, but I don't know who the hell he is. I feel like I recognize his voice, then I go and look at his filmography. I've never heard his actual voice! How is this possible?
But just the...
No. Brilliant.
The Skrull approximation of soft skills. Which is what I look at it as, you know, like, you know, we're gonna get in there, and we're really gonna just sell our presence, you know? We're gonna negotiate, we're gonna... Like, that's amazing. Like, he blew me away.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that there was a wonderful bait and switch with the Skrulls, which is you immediately assume they're up to no damn good. Because Skrulls.
Right.
And then, you know that Fury's boss has been assimilated, so... You know, that's curtains for him. And then he's after Fury. He and the whole bunch are after Fury because it turns out what's really wonderful is you think about everything that comes after and then retroactively look at what it came before. You can piece it all together. The only reason he was after Fury is because Fury was with what he assumed was his arch enemy.
Right.
He needs
and nobody questions Jude Law being the bad guy because he's beautiful.
Right.
He's a gorgeous man. This thing was full of gorgeous men.
He's gonna jump.
Yeah.
He's gonna
with an
a
accent.
Of cavalrymen on horses over the ridge later. Like he's the hero. He talks like a hero. He carries himself like a hero.
He's got the eyes of a hero that will melt your heart and feed you tulips later. It's going to be amazing.
My secret shame.
My secret shame.
And what's sad about the Ewan McGregor character, Ewan McGregor? No. Jude Law character. That Freud. What's sad about the Jude Law character is that the characterization of that particular person, not him as a human being, is je ne sais quoi, I guess, is that the character goes down at the end still thinking that he's the hero.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know,
that's the thing the comics did with the Kree-Skrull War, and, you know, the Kree-Skrull War kind of, you know, voicing its, you know, Vietnam dissent. And that's, you know, what the movie showed too, is that neither side, you know, the Skrulls just wanted to survive.
Yeah.
I'm just glad it wasn't Reed in the Marvel universe or in the MCU.
And the thing about it is,
could have been. We don't know that.
The Skrulls become the perfect enemy because of their physiology.
Yeah. Exactly.
No matter how good a Skrull, you can't trust them because they could be anything. And in fact, I have a burning question I hope someone can answer. Has a Skrull ever in the history of Marvel Comics in print been a filing cabinet? I want to believe that that line has some precedent somewhere. Because when John Byrne in Fantastic Four robbed the Skrulls of their powers.
Yeah.
Because apparently it was just sort of this thing that was transmitted from a central location to all Skrulls that allowed them to do this. There was like a little montage of shots of Skrulls suddenly being stuck, like those three that were forced to be cows by Reed Richards without him realizing that, you know, Earth grass is venomous to them. So, way to go. Way to murder three Skrulls.
Oh, you're worried about the three and not the 3 billion?
I'm more worried about those three because he blatantly, thoughtlessly murdered them. And then...
bovine murder.
That's right.
Well, then he put Skrull matter into the ecosystem. So vultures and carrion beetles and worms and stuff then devoured this stuff, and then that's how Mar-Vell got cancer.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Thank you for solving that mystery.
He had a bad Skrull steak. But the thing about it is that...
full of worms.
Yeah. That there was a shot of a, you know, some alien species that was the, you know, the typical burn, weird, big head alien. And they're like, why is this... statue from the Skrull ambassador glowing, suggesting that some poor sap really pissed off his commanders and had to go undercover as a statue.
I think that the filing cabinet thing has happened.
Yeah, I feel like that had to have happened somewhere, and I can't seem to find a Skrull filing cabinet. Apparently, there's somebody on Etsy who's made filing cabinets out of a bunch of pictures of Skrulls out of comics. That's about all I can find.
And keep in mind, Skrull haven't been popular for, you know...
I know, it's the damnedest... But, you know, what can't you find on Etsy?
That's true. That's true. All gone 2020.
Exactly. I mean, the Harold Lloyd toilet seat was a bit bizarre to me as well. I can't find any precedent for that.
Oh, God. But, yeah, I think... because all of... okay, so I love it when one of the movies comes after the fanboys, right? I love it when... because for me, the reason that I like Iron Man 3 so much, call back to the top of the show, is that the whole point, not only was it a red herring for your average viewer, right, that doesn't know who the Mandarin is, give two shits outside of the movie, is...
was unbothered by Trevor.
Right. Or was bothered by the fact that Trevor wasn't, you know, a super villain and it ended up being a Memento. was that every, you know, the reason I like it and so many people didn't like it was because I like the fact that that they found a way to make it interesting for me and surprise me.
Okay.
And this did the same thing, where I went in full force, and Cole and I had conversations, like, one of the most poignant conversation, this is how badly they got us, was, it was like a week and a half, it was like a week before AllCon, and we were talking about the movie, and I had this idea for how to introduce the Super Skrull, and I was pitching this idea, fully accepting the fact that the Skrull were going to be the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get into the movie and I sit down and, you know, all of a sudden you've got Ben Mendelsohn, you know, doing his best Michael Keaton impression and convincing you that he is the best guy in the world and all he wants to do is go home and that he's been wronged. Mm-hmm. And you're like, and you keep waiting for it. That's the greatest part, is that they've done it so well that you keep waiting for that scene where they turn and they never do. And it's like, oh, shit, okay, got it. Thank you for that. Didn't like the Kree anyway, they're weird.
Not all of them.
That's weird too, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mar-Vell and Jude Law was a white boy, he wasn't like a blue boy.
That's true. Well, I mean, they'll take them all as long as they're willing to kill people.
That's true. Yeah. Or Skrulls.
Nasty
Skrulls, yeah. Because then you got like the what is it, Kree Volstagg?
What?
From the Warriors 3.
Oh, the big burly. Yeah.
Yeah, like in every group you have to have the big guy with the ZZ Top beard.
That's why I called him SEAL Team 6, because like in every movie like that, that's what we get. We get like the big bodybuilder, and then the you know, the lithe lady that is good with a gun and a knife and a wit, and then your beautiful commanding officer man.
It's almost like, you know, the alien Fox Force 5 or something.
It was it was the Kree Spendables.
Kree Spendables, I love it.
That's fantastic.
I mean, they brought in, you know, some people from all over the place, just the best of the best of the killers.
So I think we should go back to the you know, the Captain Marvel, the woman, and all the
mannequins.
The angry fanboys.
Oh yeah, You want to talk about that for a while? That's cool.
We can talk
about angry fanboys.
Well, partially because of the fact that, you know, like, part of me is enjoying immensely that all these crybabies are going to have to watch this very powerful woman save the Marvel universe.
Oh Jesus!
That we're at the fulcrum, if you will, and it's going to probably be her, and in addition to the others.
But she's more going powerful. To turn
the tide. She's more powerful, but they can't deal with it.
No.
Well, and the thing about it is, I have a long-standing theory about the crybaby community or the vitriolic community. I would wager that not a third of them are sincere, which is to say that the vast majority. We live in a world that is replete with the guys that Alfred talks about in The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
That there are some people that just want to watch the world burn. And that world is a virtual one where they can just go on and say things and create these inflammatory conversations. And they can just sit back. I mean, think of the power that you might feel if you're powerless in your life and you can go and just dance, monkey, dance.
But isn't that speaking to the whole thing, what you just said?
No, not well, that's why I say I was, there are some that are genuine, but I think that there is just a lot of monkey dance going on as well.
Okay.
Well, and I think that the problem with monkey dances is that it affects people.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether or not they are
sincere. Yeah, the instigator is sincere or not, yeah.
Right. They cause incredible amounts of harm. And it is, as a woman, where I have battled that my entire life because I was the girl who at 7 years old was riding her bike to the Walgreens to pick up her comic books, and they were like, and people like, they're not for you. Yeah. And I had to explain exactly why they were wrong. And I'm 7 years old. No, I need to figure out what Batman's up to this month. You can suck it. But it's, and I probably said that at 7.
I'm sure you did.
Very reminiscent of Michael Price talking about it, you know, in his childhood and, in like the 40s and right. Going into this bookshop. You got any comics in this joint?
Suck it, mister. Exactly.
Right. So it is, this movie like represents, and it's not, you know, it's the first Marvel movie also that is, it's a female led Marvel movie. It is also supported by other females, like her best friend, who is also a badass.
Who gives birth to another Captain Marvel.
Right, who gives
that
birth.
That was brilliant.
Gets in the plane and just rips that shit up.
Yes.
And saves them. And she's, it is a movie resplendent in strong female characters. And to have that be what's going to save the Marvel Universe is some sweet, sweet pie.
Well, but and also, let's keep in mind, you know, Cole, just to speak to your point, right? I believe that that's true because, you know, the opposite, if, you know, there's a male gaze, there's a correct gaze, there's a male gaze, and then there's a weird male gaze that lives in it and then looks at the male gaze, you know, can see kind of what's going on. And I definitely see that happening. There are a certain subset of, like, 4chaners that just will jump on a thing that they know is going to piss people, you know, a certain segment of people off. But keep in mind, they're doing that because they don't respect the group of people that they're pissing off.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to come across dismissive of...
No, I don't think you did.
...the vitriol, because regardless of its origin, it's still, no matter what angle it's coming from, be it like the ridiculous notion of boycotting episode 7 because of Finn, or and some of the stuff that came out of that, it was just like
Black Panther,
how did you even make that connection that, you know, there was somebody spouting off, and unfortunately the real problem is that it just goes like wildfire. Mm-hmm. If somebody puts out some BS like that and everybody has to jump on it because it's there. And that was, you know, this notion that having a stormtrooper character played by an African American actor, or actually he's British, but, you know, was somehow a signal that white people were about to be obliterated. This was the you know, the rallying cry. I'm like, how did you even arrive at that? Of course, in a situation like that, there's no logic to it at all. It's just BS being thrown out there, and they're just fueling fires they know are already burning somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, I saw a...
that this happens with popular culture, because it robs us of all that this could be.
Oh, no, Cole, I didn't think you were being dismissive at all. Like, I see it often. But I also see the other side. Like, I was telling you guys, I think either prior to the show or that I've been asked more than once by more than one person as the, and we've all experienced this, as the go-to person that's going to explain the Marvel Universe, right?
The ad hoc authority.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why does it have to be a woman? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Mm. Like, is that your question? You know, of everything, it's why does it have to be a woman?
That is your takeaway.
Right.
Woman.
This doesn't look like me. I don't feel as powerful because it's not, you know. But
that's right. In light of the minimal 70-30 ratio of on-screen male to female heroes.
Right.
And it's still never enough.
It's still never enough.
And I saw an article as I was coming in to record this from, I think it was IO9. What's up with Carol Danvers' makeup? Some fans are wondering why Carol's wearing more makeup in Avengers than she did in Captain Marvel. And I'm like, really?
What?
Yeah, it's a real article.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, this is what we're focused on. We're not focused on the fact that the most powerful person in that Marvel universe is now a woman. Like, mm-hmm. that's insanely cool. And
yeah.
should be, and righteous, and awesome, because it creates... It's either A, going to create a dynamic within that group,
mm-hmm.
where there's going to be a sea change, and things are going to have to be addressed in a cool, smart way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or B, they aren't, and it just happens, and it's mm-hmm. rad. You know? That's...
And again, I think in some ways, and this is not to justify, but I think where a lot of this might come from is this modern retooling of everything. There's this sense that we have to make a female Ghostbusters, or, you know, don't make a female Ghostbusters because, you know, if we're going to remake Ghostbusters, we have to sort of flip the gender script. Do it because it's a good, because it works, because it's a good idea, because it's a good, but, you know, to just sort of like reassign the gender of every single character and make them largely identical to the male counterpart. I would rather have seen, and I have not seen the new Ghostbusters, but I would rather have seen a Ghostbusters with women who were their own individual, unique, new types of characters. You don't need Egon.
Yeah.
No.
Need four distinct women the way you had four distinct men. Mm-hmm. And I think in many ways we're suffering because of that going on in Hollywood, where it's just a plug-in, just, you
no
know,
original ideas
yeah,
type of thing.
Right.
Switch and, you know, redo it. We need to, I mean, a female doctor in Doctor Who makes perfect sense, because mm-hmm. it's just like, oh my God, we're so far behind the times, we need to fix this. It was more, why not? Why wouldn't? I mean, the Doctor is different every damn time. Why should we be bothered with that? But we're bothered with that because of things like knee-jerk Ghostbusters.
Right. Well, but that's why Captain Marvel's even more important. Because
right.
her talent, her strengths, yes, like I said before, she was strong before any of the power showed up. But the thing about that I always loved about Carol Danvers is right at the end when she says, I don't have to prove anything to you, because she uses her emotions as an asset instead of what she has had been pounded into her brain by Jude Law the whole time, that you can't control yourself. Even the Supreme Being said it. You don't know how to control yourself. That's not how women work. Women are stronger by using the emotional spectrum that they inherently have.
That, and she doesn't fall into his trap. His trap
yep.
is fight me. You
fight
know,
me, right.
You, there's a good chance you're going to beat the living crap out of me.
He knows.
But I'll have the satisfaction of knowing that I went down fighting. Not
well,
that,
I'm going to gaslight you into thinking that
yeah.
my, that you, yeah.
Well,
that
the,
my
the male reaction would have been to fight Jude Law.
Yeah.
That would
right.
have been the, if it would have been a male character, that would have been a fight.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, yeah. and that was cool.
And it was brilliant. And she's no less the hero for just
she's
zapping him.
Hero.
Because
yeah.
Because he needs to be zapped and just and neutralized and told to go F himself, because that's what needs to happen to kind of reduce the swelling in his ego. Mm-hmm. And he still is just, you know, it's all she can do to close the canopy because his head's still so big on that escape pod thingy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to send him packing is far better than to defeat him in hand combat, because he can still say to himself, well, yeah, you know, you got a couple of lucky shots in and you got
you're
my cauliflower.
Your phone, right?
Yeah. And yeah, you got the power.
Her...
It's like, screw you. Just go home and tell everybody to leave us the hell alone.
Her emotions also, I might point out, is the thing that helped her destroy the mechanical bug thing on her neck that was holding her back.
Yeah.
You know, that's another part that I absolutely loved, that when she finally stood up and said, I feel like I've been fighting with my hand tied behind my back my entire life. And after that montage of her getting up and just getting up and just getting back up,
mm-hmm.
That determination, that's Carol Danvers. That will.
Exactly. And she, that was her before she got superpowered.
Yeah.
Before
she
you
got.
Know, before the Energizer Bunny blew up all over. But also, she, God, The thing about it is her emotions also give her the capacity for the compassion necessary to recognize the plight of the Skrulls.
Yep.
Exactly.
Because all she's known since she lost her people memory was what the Kree have drilled into her. And it's like, you know, How to Train Your Dragon, kill on sight kind of mentality. And she's able to come in and say, no, that, you know, maybe there's more to the story than we've been told. And, you know, get to meet the Skrull younglings and the video game aficionados.
I think it's really cool that speaking to the Avengers, right? I think it's really cool that she's gonna step in and finish a job that they couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a really cool, because if you think about it, they've kind of set this up in the last movie, right? Mm-hmm. There was and I'm not going to get too heavy-handed, preachy, anti-misogynist. You know, it is still
sure
a comic
you're not.
Book. It is still a comic book movie, right? Like,
yeah.
But there were a lot of what I'm going to put in big air quotes male reactions that led to the events of the
Certainly.
End of the first last movie.
Mm-hmm.
And now the result of those actions is now we have to call mom and mom has to fix it. And, you know,
but,
big
you know,
sis
the,
is going to fix it.
There is one compelling question is that
those
one
mannequins.
Of the, oh, yeah, well, there's that. That will be
it's a standard.
But this becomes the Camelot 3000 question.
Okay. Oh, God. Okay.
When,
shit.
Let's bring up Dazzler while we're at it.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, okay, so I'm ready for
this.
The
concept in Camelot 3000 was that upon his demise, King Arthur pledged to return to England in its hour of greatest need and waits like 5,000 years to show up.
Right.
The almighty Zarkon. And sorry, lots of little things cropping up the last minute. So I remember when Steve McCauley and I were following that and had to wait that dreadful year. Yeah, I'm going there.
Why? Show me on the weird thing that they made into Percival where they hurt you.
But they, I remember Steve saying, what about World War II? But, you know, that not... This has that unfortunate thing where we get this retrofitted history, and it's like, Nick, did you leave the beeper at home during the invasion? Was that not
so
good
many
enough
questions?
For you?
Ask, I mean, the questions like those. You know,
you have to wait until you nearly got disintegrated, and your thumb, what was left of it, was just enough to push the button.
But this, you know, that's the thing is, like, when do you? I think it was the Avengers, which, by the way,
the presence of the Avengers makes a world of difference.
Kind of dumb that that's how he named it, the Avengers Initiative. Because in the comic, wasn't her name like Cheeseburger or something like that? For real though, like, wasn't her call sign like?
There was something, yeah.
Yeah.
But we're
gonna
call her Avengers so that we can backpedal. You know, we can backfill into the Avengers, like, dumb. Should have been the Cheeseburger Initiative.
Or the more tropical Cheeseburger in Paradise Initiative.
Ooh. God.
Why hasn't Jimmy Buffett been in any of these movies?
I know! What the hell?
It's tragedy.
He's tied to that Jurassic World series.
He is. He's immortalized.
Indomitably, yeah. In fact, he'll never be able to escape.
I'm going to look it up.
All right.
Marvel call sign.
But the
I
thing about it is that the fact that what you have, what's wonderful about Captain Marvel as the film, as a kind of final brick in building the domicile that will be Endgame,
mm-hmm.
The bladder bursting, agony inducing Endgame, is
cheeseburger.
That you have.
Sorry.
All right.
It is cheeseburger.
You have Thanos as the ultimate willful male in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's got an idea in his in the larger head, and he is not going to let go of it.
Right.
He is the ultimate pedant.
Mm-hmm.
He is the ultimate willful reactionary. And these are characteristics that are very much ingrained in the nature of especially those who fancy themselves the alpha male, the type of people who espouse mm-hmm. It's like, don't be the hammer, don't be the nail, be the hammer. And it's like, well, you know, that's all well and good, guy, but without the hammer, the nail's little more than a sharpened piece of wire, and the hammer's little more than a cudgel.
Also, once he found that mansplaining stone, it was all over.
And frankly, yeah, that's true. But frankly, on that note, I think that the nail is far more important because it does its job for decades.
That's true.
The hammer does a few little taps and moves on to the next nail, which in turn does its job for decades. Excuse me, alpha males, you got it all wrong.
I want to be a washer.
Oh.
It's the unsung hero of the
supportive. So supportive.
Yeah, just not even the nut.
There's a joke somewhere, I'm sure.
I just want to be the washer.
So can we take a moment to be working the Flurkin?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
How incredible. I mean, being a toy collector, and I'm sure Andy fell prey to this too. Unfortunately, the toys come out anywhere from a month to, in the case of Star Wars, 4 months before the film, mm-hmm. and often inadvertently spoil something.
Yeah.
Right.
And there was the retro Nick Fury figure
mm-hmm.
comes with Goose, a kind of bondage Goose, if you will. Which immediately led me to, it was a great misdirect in a way, because I thought, oh, the cat's a Skrull. Skrulls are the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we do need to talk about Goose, but I want to point out something that occurred to me after seeing Captain Marvel, is the Skrulls were always wonderful villains, and the Super Skrull, of course, becomes their ultimate weapon.
Right.
Like the FF. The thing about it is, you can have the Skrulls be a persecuted race that was, the Kree were trying to enact genocide, and you can have them be not as ignoble as you might have imagined going into the film, and still have bad Skrulls. And I'm hoping that the Marvel Cinematic Universe realizes that in any population, there's always the disenfranchised and the downright evil.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just because those exist, it doesn't reflect the entire population or the entire race. But they can be the bad guys as well, and I'm hoping that mm-hmm. you see that.
Yeah, yeah.
And meanwhile, yeah. A cat that pulls a Stranger Things face...
but floats in space, and everybody loved it.
Well, that cat was introduced in the new Marvel, or the new Captain Marvel standalone series, and has been a fixture in her life in the comic books since then, and mm-hmm. it was fantastic to see it realized.
Yeah. Yeah.
So good. And the fact the fact that it's the thing that carried the Tesseract for so long is so cool. Like, that's
right.
So amazing.
And the fact that four cats had to play that character.
Did they really?
Yeah, I was watching the credits, and there was like a list of four names of cats.
What were the names? Do you remember?
You know, I'm thinking maybe like you had one cat that was highly trained to act like it was coughing up a hairball.
Oh, so they just took any of mine? Cool. So let me ask this, because we gotta wrap it up pretty soon. What are we looking forward to with the appearance of Carol in the further Marvel Universe?
I think Carol is going to be that piece of reason, that voice of reason. You know, she hasn't been involved with the stuff going on Earth. She's going to be concerned about Nick Fury. She's going to be concerned about her fellow humans. But she's also been off in space fighting ridiculous conflict. And I feel like she will come back with experience and maybe a level head, because she's not so disastrously depressed like the rest of them are. That's part of why.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, all of them are so broken, and she's overcome everything.
Right, and she shows up in the hour of need. Like, and they have tried. They did their best. Like, and they never have lost. And now they've lost. That's why it's a That's why it's so disturbing for a lot of us, is that our heroes didn't win. It's real life. They're just like us, and they're dealing with it just like we do. But then they have a friend who shows up and then helps them through that next phase, whatever that phase is going to look like. We don't know yet.
Yeah, just like in My Bodyguard. Yeah, I'm going all the way back to 1980.
Woo!
So does this mean, because they're saying that phase 4 is a 5-year plan, right? They've already got it mapped. And that it is going to be very, very based around women characters from the Marvel Universe. You know, you're going to have your linchpins, the new Avengers. You know, you're going to have your Black Panther, sure, which had a ton of female representation in the movie. Mm-hmm. That they're going to be introducing. You know, your Carol Danvers, Scarlett Johansson's finally getting a standalone movie.
Finally.
After God knows how long, being a righteous ass character.
11 years.
Well, also after them beating the drum that there would never be a Black Widow movie.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That was doctrine handed down from Disney. There will never be a Black Widow movie, because, you know, who would want to go see that? Like, well, right, everybody, because she's so kicks ass in that scene in the Avengers, especially.
Any of them. Iron Man 2, where she ties everybody up with her weird,
in the hallway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first Marvel hallway fight before Daredevil.
Yeah, and if you listen to the last issue, you know what were the pedigree of hallway fights.
That's right.
But the thing about it is that it's easy to look at the success of Captain Marvel as being what changed the dynamic there, but I really think that those wheels were in motion a lot earlier than that.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is, I'm terrified of the point where Disney finally falters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It has to happen at some point. But so far, they have made brilliant decisions. All of these films feel like they don't have the kind of studio meddling, apart from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, And bless them for finally pulling their heads out of their asses.
Well, yeah, they aged of Ultroned it and need to. They learned their lesson.
Yeah, the first real stumbling point. And, you know, the other thing that you run up against is these sort of reactionary headlines, like, you know, when Ant-Man doesn't make as much as Avengers did, Marvel's first big flop!
Yeah.
And it's like, did you look at the numbers? Those are not the dollar amounts of a flop. Mars Needs Moms is a flop.
But, like, that's another key point about Captain Marvel that we have to look at. Now, granted, there's an expectation, with the exception of your movies like your Ant-Man's and your Doctor Strange's, that each one of these movies is going to make more than the movie before it.
That's true.
Right. Like, that, you know, that's just sort of a cost of inflation when it comes to comic book movie. But the fact that currently the reigning champion of comic book movies that aren't titled Avengers, and I think even the ones that are titled Avengers, if I'm not mistaken, is Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Well, and Captain Marvel happens to be the second movie with a female name in the title. Let's not forget Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Which was a fantastic
deal. Right. Fantastic movie. What a great balm for after Infinity War, because we were hurting so greatly.
Yeah.
But and, here's Wasp, and Wasp is a powerful woman.
Ass.
She shows up, she kicks ass. That fight scene where she's like running on the knife.
Oh,
holy
yeah,
crap, right.
Well, and I saw a great meme the other day. It said why Avengers and Endgame is 3 hours long, and it's a picture of Luis.
Yes.
Tony Stark met.
I'd watch. Yes. They could make that as long as they want, and I would watch
yeah,
the hell out of it.
And I love the fact that there's going to be a Luis action figure.
Yes.
Oh. Wonderful. Yeah. So, Captain Marvel, yeah, Disney is going to hopefully realize that they need to keep going towards the women because it's going to be – there's a following. It's obvious.
And it's not just – you know, I think a lot of the prevailing wisdom has always been that if you have a female character, all you're doing is bringing in a female audience,
yes.
And that's not the case.
That's not
the case. If you make a good movie –
exactly.
I have been saying this for a decade or more. Make good movies.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You know, if don't make a good superhero movie, make a good movie that has superheroes in it.
Right.
That's the way you succeed.
You know, I love Spider-Man Homecoming as a high school movie.
Yeah.
Not because it's a Spider-Man movie. I mean, I love all
yeah.
that.
It was like Porky's without the sex.
Right, it was just a great high school movie. Like,
there was nothing like Porky.
I honestly, but I'm in the brain of making my point, and I wasn't listening to you, Cole.
I don't blame. My apologies.
My apologies.
Keep in mind, he's used to working with me. I don't listen to him ever. I just keep talking. So,
not a word.
No, none.
He's like Luis Deaf to me.
But it's. But Kelly, isn't that kind of similar to what we were talking about before the show, where you've got genres now that you should be using the superhero genre to play into? But you're absolutely right. It was like Breakfast Club, the comic book movie.
Yeah, where just one of the characters happened to be a superhero.
Yeah,
right. It just happened to me.
Well, and I think where they succeeded with Spider-Man was concentrating on Peter Parker as much, if not more, than Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And that's something a lot of people forgot is that Peter Parker, they made Peter Parker's life interesting and fun.
Yeah.
And his friend there, and they're trying to build the Death Star. And this is another one of those mannequin things. You could not build that Death Star in 4 days. I'm sorry.
But also remember, that was like the sixth Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
To get it
and
right.
And they made it.
And the first really good one in decades.
Right.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool.
Hashtag
so,
first.
You're absolutely right, Kelly. As you are in all things.
That's so true. You come in here and say the intelligent stuff. We drag our knuckles and our don't dung and then try to just come up with stupid jokes.
Do our best to be white guys getting it right every once in a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I do want to point out something that I feel this is where we're headed with Endgame, is that Carol Danvers becomes... because of timing of the way they're structuring all the stories and the arrival of all the different characters' tales, is that she becomes the replacement for Adam Warlock.
Okay.
Good, because they have other plans for Adam Warlock, obviously, in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which is great. He belongs there.
Yeah,
he belongs it would be there. Too much to pry bar him in. And I think that she becomes that one force that Thanos cannot, or that, you know, gives them that one edge. And the thing about it is, at this point, as far as Thanos knows, the only resistance he's ever had to deal with, and this is from day one, is the damned Avengers.
Right.
If you look at his implicit history that's imparted in Infinity War...
Mm-hmm.
He just goes around, does as he pleases, and kills half the population with his kiddos.
Right.
And moves on to the next place, and he gets wind of the Infinity Gauntlet and kills all the giant dwarves and what have you. Nobody has ever, at least as far as anyone has ever bothered to say, said no.
Well, there was that impediment of trying to dress that mannequin on Badoon. Really held him up.
That took days. Because their mannequins are more like Rubik's Cubes.
Yeah, you don't know what arms.
No,
they aren't righty lefties.
He went to that boutique Ooh La La Badoon.
Oh my
like
god!
Right now. you're making me mad.
wow.
No, okay, so let's close this out. Yeah. I think we talked about all the salient parts. Ben Mendelsohn, of course, Carol Danvers, Skrulls, Kree.
I honestly assume that was Ben Mendelsohn's proper voice and proper lisp as Krennic.
You were wrong.
Yeah, and I love him even more for it.
We talked about Jude Law's beautiful face. Tonight.
Beautiful, gorgeous face.
We talked about Lee Pace's beautiful face.
Also, inspirational.
Just a lot of beautiful faces.
He is like the god of Smurfs.
What? I don't even know what that means.
He's a Smurf Adonis. What are you talking about?
Oh, because he's blue. Adonis. He's okay.
Because he's so blue. And he just seemed
he's
like he was extra blue.
In real
like,
life, though.
Like when he aged, he got a darker blue. But
yeah.
when he was young and virile, he was a bright blue.
It was more powdery.
He'll always be young and virile. How dare you? All right. Fine. Let's plug it up. Pluggables. Kelly.
Yes, indeed.
You got something to plug.
I have something to plug. So I'm going to tell you all of my wonderful compatriots out there in podcast land that the Boonshoft Museum of Discovery is hosting a Geek Prom and Geek Fest on June 21st and 22nd in Dayton, Ohio. The 5-second pitch is the Boonshoft is a nonprofit science museum with an anthropology and archaeology collection. We teach critical thinking skills to kids and adults across the Dayton and Southern Ohio area. So we are encouraging you to come out and put on your best costume because we're going to have a cosplay contest hosted by Mr. Andrew there. We're going to have the zoo is going to be open. All the exhibits are going to be open. You can come and see our mummy. You can come see our dinosaur bones. You can come and watch planetarium shows in our planetarium. We're going to have specifically movie previews from the 1980s. On the planetarium dome because it's going to be so awesome. We're going to have the planets of Star Wars in the planetarium also. We have some really great stuff coming up with Klingons that I can't tell you about because I don't want to ruin it, but it's going to be sweet. And actually, we're probably going to have a class on how to take care of your mummy because we have a mummy and archaeologists, and she's going to actually talk about conservation and the taking care of collections and super sweet in the mummy in front of the mummy. I mean, like,
and the Klingons are going to be march.
And the Klingons are going to be there. And I've been emailing them and I've literally had to ask questions. Do you know any Klingons?
Isn't planning a con so much fun?
So much fun. Yeah.
Oh,
and some
God. How I wish I could be there.
Yeah. Fun. I wish you could come up, Cole. It's just going to be super awesome. We have a DeLorean. There's going to be a DeLorean there.
400 DeLoreans. Can I say
400?
That
actually, there might be more. Yeah, it could be a whole bevy of DeLoreans.
A gaggle?
Indeed, a murder. If
murder,
you were so
no,
cold.
That's not good.
yeah. So much to really to talk about, and so little time. So
I think
you want to check
pride.
It out?
It's
what's that?
I think it's a pride.
A pride of DeLoreans.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, tickets are $20 for the Geek Prom. You get snacks and a drink. And then if you want to buy your tickets, you can go online at www.boonshoftmuseum.org. You can buy tickets to both days and raffle tickets. We're raffling off a steampunk outfit and goat yoga right now. We have more coming.
Goat yoga.
So that's what we got.
And if I'm not mistaken, one Andrew Farmer might be hosting
yes.
Don't Leave Your Geek Card live at the Boonshoft.
Live
so.
At the Boonshoft. In the planetarium.
In the damnitarium. That's where I'm going to be.
That's right. So, in fact, I'll be sending Andy the Alcon game show kit.
Thank you so much.
Which he is now.
Yeah, and he's on his own for some components. So you have to make your own damn boards. But
oh, don't worry, we're gonna do that up right. But yeah, so 6/21, 6/22, come out to the Boonshoft. I'm not gonna sing my song. You heard it at the top of the show. Cole, what do you got to plug us up, buddy?
All right. Well, we're coming to you from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com, and you can write to us at JCUmail@yahoo.com. And the first and third Sundays of every month, you can find myself and Eddie Medina, Funky Cold Medina, on DallasOnAir.com on the Rancor Pit Live, where we do some have all kinds of Star Wars fun with your favorite Star Wars guys, and a lot of simple tricks and nonsense. That is 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central, first and third Sundays of the month, preceded on the first Sunday by Figments, the Unexplained Mysteries podcast, and that is Eddie and his wife Colleen, and then on the third Sundays with Isle of Toys, that's A-I-S-L-E, Isle of Toys, which is my toy show where I talk about all kinds of toys and different toy genres, and we've even had Sweet Pockets there on this, doing some unboxing for us in the past.
I need to do more unboxing. Ooh, that's something
you
I need
to
do
more unboxing. Yeah. I need to find you a Lee Pace Ronin figure to unbox.
I thought you were going to say costume, or just kidnap Lee Pace.
Or just Lee Pace.
Yeah. I'm just going to get Lee Pace and a gallon of bare blue, get some paint at the Home Depot. We're just going to have a Lee Pace painting party, kind of like when the MTV painted that house pink to raffle off.
The Lee Pace painting party.
We can't guarantee that will be one of the Geek Prom events.
Also,
but we're hoping.
Do we have anything for the summer tour yet, or was that under wraps still?
Still under wraps. We have one confirmed stop on the summer tour.
Nice.
I can tell you only that the name ends in con.
Nice, okay.
Mysterious.
Yes, very mysterious.
Eddie and I are still working on arranging all of the stops, but we will...
The Cracker Con?
Don't you steal my lines, Andy Farmer.
sorry, I didn't mean to... All credit for that joke goes back to Kelly Log.
I'm not supposed to say anything about it, but it is coming up in June.
In the Amish country.
Nice.
So, if you're curious and you want to try to second guess me there by my ridiculously obvious hint, you can go to Convention Awareness Project Texas, cap-tx.org, where I try my dead level best to list every convention in the state of Texas. For I think 4 or 5 years running, there have been over 100 conventions in the Lone Star State. Keep it 100, Texas.
Hey, Cole, can we make it all the conventions in Texas and one in Ohio?
You know, there may be a special dispensation here. Because
I think there might be.
Strong Texas connection.
That's right.
Send me some info and I'll do
it. I will send you all the info.
Yeah, baby.
Hey.
I haven't done any articles on that damn site in years, so...
Oh yeah, and of course, speaking of,
Let's just put this down right here. Is I want to arrange with Andy because I need to get my recording up to the modern age, which it isn't at the moment. But if you would like to sit for an interview, my first established Convention Awareness Project, I would interview convention promoters, and you would be amazed. Few of them took me up on the offer.
All right. Connections.
Connections.
We're going to paint that house pink, baby, or blue. At HK Comics Show on all of your social medias. Buy, collect, enjoy your comics. We are going to go because we are super long, so say goodnight, everybody.
Good night.
Good
Thank
night,
you.
Everybody.
And we'll talk to you next week for more Hey Kids Comics. Go to Geek Fest. It's the best thing. Bring on the fun.